Hello all. How are you? You're tuning in to the 76th episode of the Audible Weed Walk podcast, and this is Nina welcoming you. I'm going to share with you something that is the core issue why I'm doing this podcast or the coloring book or the weed walk for the matter. It is to consciously reconnect ourselves with nature, build climate resilience, improve health of our ecosystem, and in the process, bring about well-being. Well-being and health with measurable parameters. And well-being that is for all. How do we, you and I, with our choices, can bring about this? This is the topic that is so huge that I am sure that I will not be able to conclude anything in a single podcast. In fact, I'm sure that I'll have more questions than any answers. It is the enormity of this and the seriousness of the topic that made me avoid it for so long. But I have been thinking, instead of dealing with the whole issue in one or few sessions, like delivering a lecture, I would say, let's do this together. Through the stories and experiences, let's see if we can chip into the block and enhance our understanding. I need you to participate in this. Think about the issue and write to me in the YouTube channel or Facebook or even by email at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com. Tell me what you think and when you get to listen to this. And what is your reflection? The urge to add this has been part triggered by a photo that I recently saw, and you will see that in the mem associated with this podcast. It is taken by my friend Gautam Das, who is a medic by profession and an artist and traveler in his heart. He takes beautiful reflective photos and shares generously. We will come to that soon, but let me share an experience. Several years back, working in a tribal belt of Eastern Ghats in India, I realized a few things. Tribes, in their one-acre shifting cultivation, which is called Sweden plots, grew about 16 to 18 different types of crops and had enough to eat themselves and feed their family, and they supplemented their food by collecting tubers, fruits, and other food and medicines from the healthy forest cover. But then the Sweden is not considered a viable by many, many experts from various points of view, including Sweden does not match well with the landholding and therefore taxation policies in general. Also, in an expanding, with expanding urban centers, roads, building, etc., increasing population, by the way, not increasing tribal population, but land gets converted due to, increasing urban centers, roads, buildings, what have you, have dwindled forest. Given the practice of the Sweden, where traditionally a plot is left to regenerate for 5+ years, cannot be left for that long anymore. Simply, there is not that much of land to circulate. So, in the rotation, the rotation of this Sweden cultivation became shorter and shorter. The gap between the clearing and farming has been reduced to 3 years and sometimes even 1 year. Clearly, something is not viable. Let's figure out what is not viable in this practice, in this example I just gave. Is it the Sweden practice that is not viable? Or the kind of development where forest cover per person reduces, threatening all the associated service that forest gives? That includes preventing soil erosion, water catchment, that's a biggie, clean air, wild resources for resilience, be it addressing a crop disease or a human. And a diversity promotes and holds diversity that brings overall well-being. And as you can see, these benefits, it doesn't matter whether somebody is a forest dweller or a city dweller far away. These benefits reach us all. So when a program plan threatens the core base, the forest areas or the biodiversity itself, one has to think that is that a viable practice or not? Are you with me? But that is what you and I will think, because we are taking time to reflect. What would be the quick and easy way to identify the problem here? Clearly, the Sweden farming itself will be blamed, right? Not just the farming, the whole relation that the tribes have with the forest, which is mislabeled as livelihood and economic dependency. It is not that. It is much more than that. But again, in a binary world, when we are taking things and labeling things good or bad, it will be labeled as a bad idea to allow, and I emphasize on that word, imagine the audacity of that word. Audacity of the indigenous people to continue their lives and their livelihoods, and we are allowing that to happen. So it is a bad idea to allow to have that go on, right? That would be the conventional thinking. It happened that way, as I experienced it. There was a huge move to wean away people from the forest by offering them some basic training, equipment and fund to start horticulture farms and agroforestry. Guess what was promoted? Growing cashew and crops like turmeric that grew well there. The idea was that if tribal communities are getting cash crop from the same plot of land, they will not feel like shifting to another plot. That way, they will earn enough to purchase from the market what they miss out by not doing Sweden farming or from not foraging wild edibles for their daily lives in the forest. That was the thinking. There was a lot of resistance. Tribal way of life is not just about livelihood and economy, which is primarily a barter. It was a barter. So the new option was not only weaning people away from the forest, but they were weaning people away from bartering system and bringing them to money economy, bringing them to grains that come to the public distribution system, bringing them to the cooking oil like palm oil that destroys biodiversity wherever it is grown within or outside the country. But forest to a tribal community is their identity, their well-being and their health. So there was a lot of resistance, and most of these were passive. People were simply not into growing cashew or growing turmerics. Things did not work and it did not click. But then people vary. So some picked up the skills. They were encouraged and supported by the system that proposed it. So those few became good in growing cashews, they became good turmeric farmers, and they had little or no time to go and forage in the wild. They ate, they started eating polished rice and grains that they get from the market or the ration shop. One of the greatest things I think I personally have learned in ecology, specifically behavioral ecology, is to reflect on about how another being will feel or think given a situation. So imagine yourself that you are an enterprising tribal youth. You have been educated in a residential school away from home. Your parents have raised and sold goods to fund, albeit partially, your education. You understand the tribal language but prefer not to speak it, because you believe you need to redefine yourself. You have learned the skill well. You can grow cashew and have consistency in growing turmeric. Despite that, the production from year to year vary. You think if you had some more land, maybe the risk could be evened out, spread out a little. You will be sure to have a certain amount of production yearly. Then you can live better, even better. Whatever you think is better, what would you do? No, you would not shift from Sweden, one Sweden to the next. You will simply expand. Cut a few trees, a bit each year, and it's a forest, so who is noticing except your community? Then others are also doing the same. You expand the horticultural farm. There, in a few years, we have primarily a monoculture farm with little or no diversity and dwindling forest. This actually happened. What happens to the folks who did not want to or could not adjust to this new cash crop life? They are the majority, because only a few have the skills and the mindset to shift. The majority have to have less area to do Sweden farming. They cannot do Sweden farming anymore. They have less area of the forest to even forage. It does not fulfill their need, and they have no money. So they work for those who have and depend on polished grains and the PDC oil. A large number still forage because daily wage is pittance. Forage the mahua flowers, forage the mahua seeds to extract oil, forage the rockby honey, forage such nutritious and medicinal food, but now it is not for themselves. Seldom they get to eat them and use them. They are primarily to sell. Sell alongside the road. Sell to the people who come to buy for the exotic organic food stores in the cities. Wild food, mahua oil, forest honey are popular there. What happens to the tribal person who are imagining who you are imagining to be right now? What option she or he has? To work as a laborer? To forage and sell? To sell the nutritious wild and forest food that this person had the right over for generations? So if I am that person, I hand over to another and resort to palm oil, resort to polished grains and the ration shops. Pause. This is the end of the first session on this. Let's reflect and let's be honest. If you are somebody listening to this podcast, very likely you are not a tribal person leading a tribal life in a remote hills of the Eastern Ghats where my experience came from. You are like me. You are like me, a consumer. Let us reflect, do we want to encourage a system that promote this kind of life for others? What can I, you and I, together to prevent this? No one is telling that you or I should not go to forest, should not take forest honey ever, or stay away from any wild food, always. But how much, when, and at what cost? I do not have the answer. I guess each one of us have to arrive it on our own. I'll get back to this topic with more questions and more dimensions to this, but maybe not next week. Sometimes in the near future. Next week, we will get back to our backyard with the weeds still available now as summer sets in. Until then, stay well and stay safe.
This is Oroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.